So today's Sunday feast talk is going to involve a discussion on developing what is called inner vision or equal vision. How those who are advanced in spiritual development develop this vision where they see all living entities equally. And so what I've done is put together this presentation for today, where I'm going to illustrate this point with verses from the Bhagavad Gita. This is the Bhagavad Gita written by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, which is the text that we follow in our line. It was first spoken by Krishna to Arjun on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And what we are going to be doing is looking at some of the key verses from the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna spoke to Arjun, where he describes this transcendentalist, this soul, advanced soul, a humble sage, who has developed transcendental knowledge and has equal vision, sees all living entities equally. And Krishna will talk about what the characteristics, symptoms of this elevated soul is. He will tell Arjun, how does he behave? What does he do? And then we will go into why not everybody has equal vision. What is it that is preventing people from having equal vision? What is actually coming in the way of our spiritual development? And how can we overcome that? What is the process that Krishna is recommending in the Bhagavad Gita, whereby which one can overcome these limitations and come to the transcendental platform where then one can start seeing all souls equally, develop equal vision? So I have selected verses, some verses from the fifth chapter, the Bhagavad Gita, and some from the sixth chapter, key verses, and also some verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam that addresses this point. What we are going to do first is look in detail at a couple of key verses which are in the fifth chapter, where Krishna essentially points out who this person is who has this transcendental equal vision, and what is that person doing. And then we will go into the symptoms and other characteristics of that. So what I'd like you to do is open your Bhagavad Gitas to chapter 5, text 17, and that's on page 245. The chapter Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness, text 517. I'll recite the verse and you can recite after me. Tad buddhyas tad atmanas tan nisthas tat parayana Gashanti apunar avritim Gnana nirduta kalmasa Tad buddhaya. Those whose intelligence is always in the Supreme. Tat atmana. Those whose minds are always in the Supreme. Tat nistha. Those whose faith is only meant for the Supreme. Tat parayana. Who have completely taken shelter of Him. Gashanti. Go. Apuna avrittim, to liberation. Gnana, by knowledge. Nirduta, cleansed. Kalmasa. Misgivings. Translation. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge, and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Repeat after me. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge
are all fixed in the Supreme,
then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge, and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. What we can do is take up the reading of the purport in turns. So, Shraddha Mataji, would you like to read that purport for 517? Yes.
The Supreme Transcendental Truth is Lord Krishna. The whole Bhagavad Gita centers around the declaration that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the version of all Vedic literature. Paratattva means the Supreme Reality, who is understood by the knowers of the Supreme as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagwan. Bhagwan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the last word in the Absolute. There is nothing more than that. The Lord says, Matta Parataram Nanyat Kinchid Asti Dhananjaya. Impersonal Brahman is also supported by Krishna. Brahmanohi Parisht Pratishtham. Therefore, in all ways, Krishna is the Supreme Reality. One whose mind, intelligence, faith, and refuge are always in Krishna, or in other words, one who is fully in Krishna consciousness, is undoubtedly washed clean of all misgivings and is in perfect knowledge in everything concerning transcendence. A Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality, simultaneous identity, and individuality in Krishna. And equipped with such transcendental knowledge, one can make steady progress on the path of liberation.
Thank you. So, what is described in the verse, firstly, is this declaration. The Bhagavad Gita says that the supreme transcendental truth, or the absolute truth, is Lord Krishna. Even Vedic literature says, Vedas say that the goal of the Vedas is to realize the supreme personality of Godhead, who is Sri Krishna. The Brahma Samhita says the same thing, that the primeval Lord Govinda is the supreme personality of Godhead. So this is the verdict of all Shastra, all Shastric literature, that it is Sri Krishna who is the supreme personality. Now the living entity, as Krishna has already spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, we are here at chapter 5, but in earlier chapters, like in chapter 2, Krishna has said who the living entity is. He has said that this living entity is a part and parcel of me. I am the super soul, and the living entity is a fragmental soul, but is part of him. He has this, he's similar in quality, but different in quantity. So here it talks about an intelligent soul, an intelligent soul who with faith and shelter is absorbed in Krishna. His minds and thoughts, all his words are in Krishna. He's said to be fully in Krishna consciousness. So when we are talking about one who is in Krishna consciousness, what we essentially are talking about is someone who is has his mind fixed on Krishna, he's thinking about Krishna, and he's serving Krishna. Krishna is the primary object for him. And the verse says that when one has one's intelligence, mind, faith, and shelter, refuge, all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes purified. It is purification from the heart. The dust of material contamination that is accumulated over number and number of generations is cleansed. All the misgivings and sins are cleansed. and one acquires complete knowledge. This is transcendental knowledge. That knowledge is essentially that I'm not this body, but I am a fragmental spirit soul who is part and parcel of the supreme soul. That's the Lord, the absolute truth. And so when one has this knowledge, transcendental knowledge, through this process, then one can advance on this path of spiritual realization. One can advance on the path of self-realization. And in the process, one can become liberated. Because it's saying the path of liberation. This liberation that has been talked about is essentially liberation from entanglement in the material world, where through identification of ourselves as the body, we have become entangled. We have become conditioned, trying to essentially satisfy the needs of the body through sense gratification, and therefore we have become bound up, caught up in this endless cycle of birth and death. So in order to liberate oneself from this, one has to turn away from the bodily concept and focus one's mind intelligence with faith on the Supreme, the Lord, and thereby one can achieve purification and become free from this bondage in the material world. So that is essentially what this verse is saying. And it also says that a Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality, simultaneous identity and individuality. What is referred to there is that we have a certain identity. Krishna points it out that you are the spirit soul, you are part and parcel of me. But we also have fragmental individuality. It is different from this other lines of thinking. One thought is the Mayavadi thought that ultimately we have to merge into transcendence or fuse into the Supreme. That is not the concept advocated by the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita says that just like the Lord is full of knowledge, eternal, and is blissful, the living entity also has those qualities. And the living entity maintains its individuality in service to the Lord. It is not losing identity. Identity is there, and individuality is there, and there is devotional service that continues eternally. So that's what the verse is pointing out. Now let's go to the next one, which is going to tell us about these persons who are in complete knowledge. Because we just saw that one who with intelligence and faith is absorbed in Krishna develops transcendental knowledge. Who are these persons? And that's in text 18. And you'll have to just follow it with the text. That's essentially the next verse that comes up. And we will look at this in detail. Text 18, this is a very important verse. And this verse will identify that person who has this equal vision, which is the topic, the subject of our topic today. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapakecha Pandita Sama Darsina Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Sani Chaiva Swapakecha Pandita Sama Darsina. Any chanters? Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Brahmane Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapakecha
Sunichaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. Now, we'll go to the translation later. Anybody else would like to chant the verse?
Vidya Vinaya Sampanne.
Vidya Vinaya Sampanne.
Brahmane Gavi Hastini.
Brahmane Gavi Hastini.
Shunichaiva Shvapakecha.
Shunichaiva Chapakecha.
Pandita Samadarshina.
Pandita Samadarshina.
Vidya Vinaya Sampanne.
Vidya Vinaya Sampanne.
Brahmane Gavihastini.
Brahmane Gavihastini.
Shunichaiva Swapakecha.
Shunichaiva Swapakecha.
Pandita Samadarshina.
Pandita Samadarshina. Translation. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater or outcast. Please repeat after me. The humble sages,
the humble sages,
by virtue of true knowledge,
by virtue of true
knowledge, see with equal vision,
see with equal vision,
a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow,
a cow,
an elephant,
a dog,
and a dog eater or outcast. Prabhu, could you read the purport?
A Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. The Brahmana and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, and an elephant may be different from the point of view of species. But these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to their relationship to the Supreme, for the Supreme Lord, by His plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. Such an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned, in different castes or different species of life, the Lord is equally kind to everyone because He treats every living being as a friend, yet He maintains Himself as Paramatma regardless of the circumstances of the living entities. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in the outcast and in the Brahmana, although the body of a Brahmana and that of an outcast are not the same. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature, but the soul and the supersoul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the supersoul, however, does not make them equal in quantity, for the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A truly learned and a Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and the supersoul are that they are both conscious, eternal, and blissful. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the supersoul is conscious of all bodies. The supersoul is present in all bodies without distinction.
Thank you. So this is a very important verse which really describes this humble sage who has attained transcendental knowledge and has developed equal vision. He's seeing every living entity the same. How is he seeing them the same? Well, here it points out that the vision that he has is actually focused on the true identity of the living entity. It is not focused on seeing the living entities as various bodies in different species. As you know, there are something like 8,444,000 species or so. You have from the smallest ant all the way to the elephant, and you also have the human souls, where we have also a large number in that species. There are bodily differences. Every species is different. Biology will teach you. And that every species breeds true to give rise to progeny that resemble the parent. But that is at the bodily level. Again, one could look at human souls, human beings, at the bodily level. And if they look at them just at the body level, they may have a tendency to make distinctions. Like formerly, you know, in India, we used to have this caste system where people were designated to different castes. And here, we are not talking about the Varnashram divisions. We are talking about just castes based on one's birth and one's social status and things. In that case, one is making distinctions at the bodily level. Here it is talking about the humble sage who transcends that. He sees that every living entity is a particle soul that has emanated from the Lord. He sees one life pulsating in all living entities. So for him, a brahmana, a dog, or a cow is the same in the eyes of God, in that they are all living souls. Of course, there are going to be differences in the level of spiritual development, because we know that is the human body, the human species, that has the faculty of reasoning and thinking and intelligence to be able to realize the Supreme through the process of self-realization. Other living entities do not have that faculty, such as the animals. There are those distinctions at the level of spiritual evolution, but the God, the Lord, is them in all of them. He's there in them as Paramatma, as this verse itself says. And in the 13th chapter, Krishna goes into this. He points out that every body is a field. And in that body, there is the Atma, the soul. Who knows his or her body? He or she, the Atma, is present in the heart of the individual. But he says that in addition to the soul, there is also a knower, another knower, who knows all bodies. That is me. That is the Paramatma, the super soul, who is present also in the heart of living entities. So the humble sage who has attained knowledge, attained this transcendental knowledge, is having this equal vision where he is seeing that Atma. Krishna says that I've also entered the atom. The sage is seeing the Atma as well as the presence of the Paramatma in these living entities. So far as the Lord is concerned, it says here, it's his plenary portion. It is from his internal energy that this Paramatma has come about, through which he has entered the living souls. He is giving understanding to that living entity. In the 10th chapter, Krishna says that those who sincerely worship me or come to me, I light from within the lamp that will take away the darkness of ignorance. That's that super soul, Paramatma, who is helping the living entity, giving him intelligence and guidance in life. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in the outcast, as it said here, referred to as the dog eater, as well as in the Brahmana, although the body of a Brahmana and that of an outcast are not the same. So it is not at the bodily conception that he's looking. He is looking at the level of the true identity that is there in every living entity. Now, the other verses that will follow in this chapter are going to talk about the characteristics of this humble sage, one who has equal vision. What are the symptoms of a person with equal vision? And in text 19, also in chapter 5, it will point out that these persons who have developed this equal vision are those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity. They have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. It says, they are flawless like Brahman, and thus are already situated in Brahman. So, sameness, this quality of equanimity, it has developed this quality where it is seeing sameness in all living entities. The living entity who has developed the bodily conception of life is said to be conditioned in this material world. Those who are in this cycle of birth and death are so because of the bodily concept, they have developed certain desires and want those desires to be fulfilled, so they are given birth by the Lord. The Lord says, okay, you want these desires to be satisfied, I'll give you a place. He has given this place the material world, and he even helps to satisfy their desires. But that is at the level of sense gratification. The body has five senses, and it's reaching out to sense objects through the mind and making contact with the sense objects. Initially, it may be like nectar. It's said that in the process of sense gratification, initially it feels like nectar, but then it tastes turns out to be poison. It's kind of a fleeting satisfaction, temporary type of satisfaction. So this is the situation of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, being in this cycle of birth and death, is going through a life where there is suffering. Firstly, if you had to look at a living entity, what would you say are certain insurmountable things, certain inevitable things that they will have to suffer or go through? What would they be, let's say? Old age, yes. What else? Disease, death, and there's one more, birth. So somebody's asked, what do you think are the bigger problems of life? It is not achieving economic prosperity and making a comfortable living. It is to overcome these problems of birth, old age, disease, and death. As long as one is in this material conception, one is going to face that. Now, how is that to be overcome? Well, Bhagavad Gita says that the solution to that is Krishna consciousness. That if one realizes what one's constitutional position is, that I am the soul, not the body, and starts acting from that I am the soul, which is what these great sages are doing, then one can liberate oneself from this conditioned life and come to the transcendental platform. That is what is referred to here, the Brahman platform. The Lord is flawless. The Lord doesn't have like and dislike. He doesn't have hatred and favoritism. He doesn't have those opposites. He's flawless. And the living entity who is like the Lord in quality also can become flawless when that living entity comes to the Brahman platform, when that living entity transcends these modes of material nature that are keeping them bound in the material world. What are the modes of material nature?
If we had to name some, what would we say? Goodness, yes. Passion. And ignorance. And if you had to rate them on a scale, which is good and which is bad? Goodness is good and ignorance is bad. Ignorance is what is going to keep one in this hellish planet. Yes, you had a comment? Yeah, I was talking about in terms of the, if you had to rate them in terms of the advancement of an individual, when one is a mode of goodness, the things that a person will be doing are going to be different from the mode of ignorance. So that if you have to rate them on a scale of 1 to 10 with respect to the quality of one's actions and the qualities of one's development, then one who is in the mode of goodness is much more advanced and is closer to the state of transcendence. That Srila Prabhupada used to say that you have to be in the mode of goodness to actually take up devotional service and to advance to this state of transcendence. So that's what we are talking about. So these sages, they have developed equanimity of mind, and it's a sign of self-realization for these equipoised living entities, because for them, these opposites as such don't exist. They are tolerating good or bad. If there is, let's say, some pleasure they may get or pain they may experience, they are receiving both of them equally, because they are not identifying with the bodily concept of life. They essentially have come to terms that they themselves are spirit souls and not the body. So when the body is suffering and going through these opposites, these living entities are as such tolerant, able to tolerate them and go beyond. So Srila Prabhupada says in this text that equanimity is the sign of self-realization, that those who have actually attained to such a state are considered to have conquered material condition. That is specifically birth and death. These sages have conquered this birth and death because they are not identifying with the body, they are identifying themselves with the soul. And so they have been elevated to the position stage of equanimity through realization of the self. And so what does that give them? It's going to give them liberation from conditioned life and will bring them to the Brahman platform. This is what the verse is implying. They are flawless like Brahman and thus are already situated in Brahman. That by developing this quality of sameness, equality, equanimity, it has brought them to this Brahman platform. And this is a living entity who, without attraction or hatred, becomes flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky, into the material world. So sages who have this equal vision have equanimity. They are seeing everything the same and have developed self-realization. What else? Another thing is that they have steady consciousness. That is in text 20. Krishna says, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining unpleasant, who is something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God,
is already situated in transcendence. So let's read the purport to this. Prabhu at the back, if you would read it. This is to text 20.
Hare Krishna. The symptoms of the self-realized person are given here. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. He knows perfectly well that he is not this body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing something which is related to his body. This steadiness of mind is called Sthirat Buddhi or self-intelligence. He is therefore never bewildered by mistaking the gross body for the soul, nor does he accept the body as permanent and disregard the existence of the soul. This knowledge elevates him to the station of knowing the complete science of the absolute truth, namely Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. He thus knows his constitutional position perfectly well, without falsely trying to become one with the Supreme in all respects. This is called Brahman realization or self-realization. Such a steady consciousness is called Krishna consciousness.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
So some of the points that are made here in the purport is what we are talking about. And one of them is the person with equal vision is unbewildered. What is meant by that? It's explained. That is not bewildered or influenced by the false identification of the body with his true self. He's not confusing his true self with the body. That's essentially what it means. He's not illusioned. That's what this bewildered means. That he knows perfectly his identity. So when joy or sorrow come, he knows that those are associated with the body, not with the soul. And he is a dhira. He has developed steadiness. He's steady. That's the quality of this equipoised person. That whatever happens, loss or defeat, gain or sorrow, pain or pleasure, he stays steady, equipoised. Just allows them to come and go. Why? Because he says those are symptoms of the body, not that of the soul. The soul is unaffected. And this has to be lived out in practice. It is not in theory. The living entity is living it out in practice. That when these things occur, he's tolerant. He's not reacting. He is equipoised. We have a question?
Prabhuji, when we talk about equipoised, we see that in the definition of peace is still not very clear to me, at least in Krishna consciousness. Because when we see the devotees who are very closed to Krishna, very close to Krishna, we see that they are, it seems like they are not equipoised. When Krishna is happy, they are happy, and some demon come, they cry and they ask for help, and so many things. So what is this equipoised actually means in Krishna consciousness?
What equipoise means is the highest stage of Krishna consciousness. It's not to say that anyone who is in Krishna consciousness is equipoised, because we started at the outset to talk about this great sage who has developed equal vision. It is the characteristic of that. We can find verses also in the second chapter where Arjun is asking, who is this transcendentalist, this sage of steady intelligence? And Krishna says, he is this person who is equipoised. And he defines it. He says that to him, the opposites don't matter in the material world. That is, pain can come or pleasure can come, and he reacts to them similarly. So that means a person is equipoised. If some distress came, he will just say that this is the mercy of the Lord. It's my karma. It's coming. It will pass. And so won't react to it with the reaction, why me? Why am I suffering? Won't associate himself or herself with the suffering, would separate himself or herself with the process of suffering. Similarly, with profit or loss, gain or defeat, some monies are lost or some fortune is lost, or one has made an effort or an attempt in some project or something and it turned to failure, the person doesn't react. So this would be the highest quality of a person in Krishna consciousness who has developed steady intelligence, has become dhira. It is essential. This equipoised nature is that of a dhira, a steady person, which doesn't say that everyone is in Krishna, who is in Krishna consciousness, is a dhira or is equipoised. They may be on the stage to that, but if they get affected with happiness or distress as it comes, and are going through the opposites or the extremes, then they are yet to get to that platform. There is a gradation. And so it's not automatic that I have taken up Krishna consciousness, therefore I should be equipoised. That's the goal, that I have to get there. But just practicing Krishna consciousness does not automatically say that that has happened.
Thank you, Prabhuji. One thing is when Kamsa put Krishna's mom in the Devaki, in the prison, was she equipoised or she suffered, right? So is that at a different level, they beyond equipoised, or what is that kind
of state? Body is suffering. We are asking, is the living entity suffering? Yes or no? The way the living entity receives it, here we are talking about this great sage who is not identifying himself or herself with the body, separating himself from himself. I'm not that. I am the soul that is a part and parcel of Krishna, and I am as such eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. And that these things that are happening, this pain and pleasure and distress and happiness, they come and go. They are part of the body. That's not me. He has separated himself. So in the case of Devaki, it would be how she felt about it or her reaction to it. Physically, it would feel that she's suffering. But yes. Absolutely. In fact, such a stage of steady intelligence is dependent on Krishna, always dependent on Krishna. Knows this science of God, knows the absolute truth, knows his or her constitutional position, that it is to serve the Lord, and that in serving the Lord, their happiness is going to be coming to him, peace is going to come to him when he gets situated in transcendence, such as, for example, the bliss that comes from devotional service and things. So when a devotee is engaged in devotional service and experiencing bliss, he or she experiences it. At the same time, because we are conditioned souls and we are in the material world, we go back home and we might get some news or some letter that says, oh, this was not approved or something like that. Then you have to kind of separate it, that these things that are occurring in the modes of the conditioned material world. They are not really, as such, a part of their spiritual relationship with the Lord. They come and go. And so here what it is, essentially what it's saying is that becoming equipoise, becoming dhira, is really an end goal in the spiritual path. That's where this Krishna conscious person should be heading. Because that stage of steady intelligence, who has got to the stage, who is now unaffected by all these things, has this symptom, has this characteristic. When these things happen, they will just tolerate. They won't react.
Yeah, in that sense, what you're saying makes sense, that maybe once we attain that stage, then there is actual action of Krishna consciousness, which is where Sanjay...
That's what we were talking about earlier, that knowledge alone is not enough. It has to be acted. There is action in Krishna consciousness. In fact, the important chapter is Karma Yoga. It's action in Krishna consciousness. I am acting now with the knowledge that I am the spirit soul. So I am acting from that context, not from my bodily concept.
And once we reach that point, a person could still appear to be crying for the Lord. But that's, he's not crying for anything material. That's a transcendental. So they might appear to be not equipoise in the sense that they are crying. So why are they crying? I guess that's on the transcendental plane.
Oh yes, the people who cry also during chanting and dancing and in worshipping the Lord. So it's a different emotion that comes in the relationship to the Lord. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to cry, but that is crying from the blissful side, and even the crying from separation and things comes is in the spiritual plane, spiritual platform, and not that material. You're not crying because of loss of something in the material world. Yes.
I just wanted to comment. I cannot quote where I read this, but it said that when people cry, like people cry when they're happy and they cry when they're unhappy. And so when you cry when you're happy, the tears that come out are cold. And when you cry when you're unhappy, then the tears are warm. The temperature is higher.
And also the taste.
The taste?
Yeah. Ah. The happiness, the tears are sweeter. And if it's out of sorrow, it's salty.
Salty, yes, yeah. Right. That's correct.
So maybe when it comes to, you know, once you become a equipoise person and then you're crying for the lordships, maybe the quality of the tears might be different there.
So it's a way of testing it then. We have a test to know whether one has reached that stage. Anything else? What other characteristic? Well, another characteristic is that this person, this sage of steady intelligence that we know, has lost taste for material sense pleasure. This is another symptom. They are as such not craving for it. In fact, there are some nice verses that are cited in the purport to this one, in text 21. One from Yamunacharya, great devotee in Krishna consciousness, says that since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. So this is the person in what Prabhupada calls Brahma Yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he loses his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. Now in the material world, you know, this sense gratification or sex-based pleasure is what makes the world go round. In fact, people are working. They are motivated to work and make money so that they can have sense gratification. That's the biggest motivation. That is not there for this individual. He has separated, actually, the two. And a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with great vigor without needing that motivation, without that sex pleasure, which he avoids. This is actually a test in spiritual realization. You see, this is a very powerful point, that these great sages, who we said
have attained steadiness, they are dhira souls with steady intelligence, have lost taste for material pleasure, are not basing their efforts in spiritual development so that at the end of it they would get sense gratification or sense pleasure. They are heading towards spiritual realization. So as such, spiritual realization and sense pleasure don't go hand in hand. That is another very important point. Krishna also has said that earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, that those who are caught up in sense gratification, material world, it is very difficult for them to properly engage in devotional service. Becomes, as such, mutually exclusive. It just does not go hand in hand. So a Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure because he has become a liberated soul. And we talked about that earlier. What is that liberation? That he has transcended from this platform of the modes of material nature, including even goodness, and has come to the Brahman platform. He has come to the platform of transcendence, where he knows his identity. I am part and parcel of the Lord. I am a spirit soul. And what is my constitutional position? Is to serve Krishna. That I am a servitor of the Lord. And so this person's modus operandi, all the energies and everything, is oriented towards the Lord. As opposed to the conditioned soul, who, as we said, being motivated by sense gratification, is working. This person is not working for that. So, he doesn't engage in sense gratification. Text 22, that this intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery. Sense gratification in the material world is associated with sources of misery. We know the threefold miseries that come from material life. Those that result from one's own mind and body. A second form of misery that arises from interaction with others in relationship. And the third, which is inevitable, caused by the calamities, natural disasters and things that cause this suffering. Threefold miseries, as they are called. They are due to contact with material senses. Contact with the material senses with sense objects. So Krishna says to Arjuna, O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end. So the wise, this sage of steady intelligence, does not delight in them. As such, he doesn't engage in them. He has separated himself from that. That's another characteristic. So this brings us then to the need, the necessity, for a person who is on the path of spiritual realization to control the forces of the material senses. And some of us who have been in the Bhakti Shastri class, we have learned what these forces of material senses are. If you had to name them, what would you say they are? What are some of these forces, urges? Urge to speak from the tongue, correct. What else? Urge related to, what did you say? Mind. The thought process, if it is, for example, thought process caught up with sense gratification, then yes, that would be another urge. Force of mind, that's correct. Then you mentioned about force of talk, the speech. What else? False ego. False ego, yeah. The identification of the mind with the false ego can create a problem. That's right, yes. So that's once again the force of the mind.
The urge of the genitals.
Yes, force of the genitals, correct. What else? Too much of sleeping, too much of eating, yes. Also, force of the stomach is going to be is another urge, and force of the tongue. These are the forces. And this is what is keeping a conditioned soul tied up. So the stage of steady intelligence is able to control these forces, these five forces that we are talking about, and is a Goswami. He's a Swami. Swami is one who has attained the ability to be able to control the forces. They live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Whereas for the conditioned soul, who is in sense gratification, if you study the dynamics of what actually goes on or happens, this is like a dynamics, the process, that the senses are reaching out for sense objects. They are trying to gain pleasure and they are trying to avoid pain. And they get some enjoyment. Enjoyment will come. But we know it's fleeting. It is temporary. And we just talked about it. It brings suffering. There could be distress also that may come. The process is that you try to satisfy something and the satisfaction doesn't occur. There is anger. There is frustration that can develop. And Krishna points out, this all begins with lust. And it goes through this dynamic where it will end in a state of bewilderment and loss of memory. That's the process. It doesn't end in a happy stage. That the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. That one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. Then one can ask, how can one control the forces of the material senses? And in the sixth chapter, Krishna goes into this and he's going to recommend, of course, the process of yoga, connecting to him, fixing the mind on him, taking the mind away from this contact with sense objects. Because that will free one then from this the dynamic process that we talked about where the senses are contacting sense objects. That Krishna tells Arjuna that one must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and can be his enemy as well. Who was that poet? It was John Milton who said, the mind is its own best friend. It can make a heaven of hell or hell of heaven, depending on how you really take the mind to be. The mind can be your friend if you can tame it or cultivate it. But if you allow it to go asunder, then it can lead to this bewilderment and loss of memory. And the Srimad Bhagavatam says that all these senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial. And the mind itself never comes under the sway of any other. It's in the Bhagavad Gita it has been described, it's a very strong force. It can, a person may be, may think that he or she is in a state of steadiness, it can, in a flash, take the person onto a different plane. That is stronger than the strongest, and its godlike powers are fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of the senses. This is what Krishna says. And so he recommends, how do you do that? By the process of yoga, by connecting to me. There are different types of yogas, of course, he talks about in the second chapter. He talks about Dhyana Yoga, the Eightfold Yoga system of Ashtanga Yoga. He talks about them. He says that a person can go to a secluded place, sit on kusha grass, and make a seat, then sit down in a certain posture, concentrate on the tip of the nose, and turn his attention inward. And if one does diligently that way, one will realize the Paramatma, one can attain Paramatma realization or Brahman realization, one can come to the platform. But Krishna is going to recommend the highest yoga, where he will say, fix your mind on me, think about me, dedicate all your activities to me. He's actually going to recommend bhakti yoga as the highest form of yoga in his recommendations in the Bhagavad Gita, whereby which we understand now that these various yogas are merely rungs on a ladder. Sometimes when we read the Bhagavad Gita, we say, but Krishna is recommending karma yoga here, and here he is saying dhyana yoga. What exactly it is, they are only rungs of the ladder. The ultimate goal is Krishna. And in bhakti yoga, one can attain that by, without having to go through these other processes, by firmly fixing one's mind and one's attention on Krishna. And one can become situated in transcendence, become devoid of all these chasing of material desires and sense gratification. Such a person is said to be well established in yoga. And so one should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith, not just casually, and not become deviated from the path. Even though, of course, there are distractions and things, one should have that, develop that one-pointed attention. One should abandon, without exception, all material desires born of mental speculation, and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind. So the key thing is to control the mind through yoga. And while one is doing this in the process, one may find from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. In fact, when Krishna was telling Arjuna this process of yoga, and after he had advocated it and gone through a whole description, Arjuna told him, but what you are recommending is not so possible. It's not easy. Because he said the mind is chanchala, it is very flickering. So how are you going to bring that under control? And so Krishna replies to him by saying, well, you can, with practice and detachment, he says, you can bring the mind under control. You must certainly withdraw it from the sense objects and bring it back under control of the self. So the yogi whose mind is fixed on Krishna, he invariably attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. Now he is going to get to this goal of this great sage, this humble sage that we started talking with in the beginning of this discussion, who has developed that equal vision. He is this individual who's focused his mind on Krishna, who is now beyond the mode of passion. And he realizes his identity, of course, is with the Supreme, because he has come to this knowledge. He's on the Brahman platform, that his identity is not with the bodily concept. He is a spirit soul who is part and parcel of Krishna. And so such an individual is going to become freed from all the reactions to past deeds. All these material reactions, sinful reactions in the material life, one is going to become free from that through the practice of this process. So the self-controlled yogi who is constantly engaged in yoga practice becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest stage of happiness in transcendental loving service to the Lord. And that allows him then to develop this equal vision that we started talking with, that he's now going to observe all beings and sees every being as being in Krishna, being part and parcel of Krishna. He's become a self-realized person. He sees Krishna, the same Lord, everywhere in all these living beings, because he has been able to control the mind and focus it on the Lord. He's getting that steady intelligence and he's developing equal vision. He's developing this inner vision, the spiritual vision, where he sees sameness in all living being. And Krishna tells Arjun, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost. I'm always there. Krishna is the devotee's best friend. Nor is the devotee lost to him. Such a devotee is very dear to him. Krishna says, my devotee never perishes. And he also says in the Bhagavad Gita that whatever he lacks, I will supply or provide. Whatever he has, he will preserve. So those are the advantages of taking on bhakti yoga, fixing one's mind on Krishna. And such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the super soul, knowing that Krishna and the super soul are one, remains always in Krishna in all circumstances. He is a perfect yogi by comparison to his own self. He sees the true equality of all beings. He develops this equal vision, both in their happiness and distress. Doesn't make that distinction. So that is the sum and substance of these verses that we just went through about this sage of steady intelligence and equal vision. Just a brief summary of what we talked about. We started by saying that when one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge or shelter are all fixed in Krishna, then one develops transcendental knowledge and equal vision, seeing all living entities equally as being spirit souls. And that in order to develop that, one needs to control the forces of the material senses that we were talking about. Because sense gratification and the path of spiritual realization are not mutually possible. There is a limitation when one is engaged in satisfying the forces of the senses in order to also advance in spiritual development. It is not easy. It's not possible. One needs to control the forces of senses through the practice of bhakti yoga, fixing one's mind on Krishna. And this is attained through controlling the mind and fixing it on the Lord. And what this will give one is this transcendental knowledge, also happiness, and this vision to see every living entity as spirit souls and develop steady intelligence. So I'll stop here at this point. If there are any questions or reflections, we have a few minutes for that.
Haribol. I don't know how this relates to, you were saying something about growing your spiritual life, and it would be like trying to make a fire grow by burning water, even though you can separate fire into hydrogen and oxygen and make a bigger fire. So scientifically, maybe you could do it, but realistically, you can't burn a bigger fire by pouring water on it, which would be engaging your material senses, trying to realize a transcendence. Thank you for your lecture, Prabhu.
Yes, you may want to explain a little bit what exactly you're talking about when you give that analogy about you cannot grow. The idea here is we have the senses. They are material senses. There are five senses that we have. They are, in the conditioned state, reaching out for sense objects. In this recommended path of spiritual development, what is recommended is to focus the senses, to connect them to Krishna, to please the senses, Krishna is the master of senses. So what it is connecting your senses to the master of senses, Rishikesha, and that is the process of salvation. So this whole thing about controlling the mind and controlling the forces of senses, essentially where it is leading to is to focus the mind on the Lord. Thereby all the senses are going to get channeled or directed then to serving the master, senses of the master, not the body of the individual.
That's essentially what the thing is.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, please.
There was one verse in which you, in the Bhagavad Gita, it said that that I, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and the Super Soul are one and the same. But also we talk about the Super Soul or the Paramatma realization being different than the
higher. Yes, correct. Essentially, what Krishna is saying is that the Super Soul is also me. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the absolute truth is defined in three phases. Brahman, that's the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, his effulgence coming from his body and lighting up all the planets. Paramatma, that is the super soul that has entered into the hearts of living beings. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, who is the Bhagwan personality. So you see, when he says the super soul and I are the same, essentially what is being referred to is it is also an aspect of the absolute truth. That in the living entity, the absolute truth has emanated or come in the form of this Paramatma super soul. But that in the spiritual world, he exists as the Bhagwan personality with whom one can also engage in devotional service. I think that's the context in which this meaning would be taken. It being an aspect of the absolute truth. Any other points or any other reflection? Okay, if not, I'd like to thank you for your presence.